Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm Cindy Morgan. I'm the Vice President of Organizational Development and Learning, and I run the Penn Medicine Academy. So welcome this afternoon. We have a really special program. I'd love to invite you to take a really nice, deep, slow breath in with me and let it out. You know, full moon and everything. Figured we might all use a little bit of grounding. So welcome. Let me turn it over to my colleague, Youngin Cho from PMA, to give you a couple of housekeeping items, as well as a few tips so you can participate fully. Youngin?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining Lunch with Leaders today. Following the last one with Kevin, where he asked us to join the pledge to be anti-racist, I'm so glad you're here to continue this important conversation. For those who are new, welcome. We'd love the session to be engaging. So please have your cell phones ready for a poll, share your comment in chat, and ask questions in the Q&A window. We'll try to get to as many as possible. Thank you, and back to you, Cindy.
Thanks, Youngin. So welcome to Lunch with Leaders. We picked up a lot of new viewers last week for Kevin's session. So we welcome those people back and welcome all of our faithful fans back to Lunch with Leaders. For those who are new, welcome. We're excited to have you here and we hope you'll come back as well. And if you like the show and you want more, you can find our back episodes on the Lead Strong website. Make sure you're telling your friends because these are important conversations that were happening and we want to spread the word as much as possible. So let's talk about the mailbag. Boy, was last week good with Kevin or what? We heard from so many of you and so many of you directly reached out to Kevin as well. It made us both feel really special. I couldn't agree with Mary Foley's comments more. Hashtag Penn Proud. I felt so inspired coming away from last week's session, and I know many of you did too. Like Emma, that helicopter moment. Boy, we try to plan these shows like intentionally to be good and inspiring and make you feel good when you go to your 1 o'clock meeting. But that helicopter moment, we couldn't have planned that even if we were like TV producers. Kevin was just so authentic in that moment. So make sure you're spreading the word with your teams, with your colleagues, to make sure that we get as many people to see that episode as possible so they feel as good as we all did leaving that session. So like Youngin hinted at, I really appreciated Kevin's comments around it's not enough to just be not racist. We got to be anti-racist. So today is a great jumping off point from that comment as well. I can't tell you how much your feedback means to the team and me. So thank you for your notes in the chat, your emails, feedback, texts, calls. It's awesome. So thank you so much. All right, time for commercials. We got some important ones today. So as you probably know, health equity is a really big component for both the ACT strategic roadmap, and we'll hear more about that today, as well as our blueprint for quality. And make sure you tune in next time because that's what we're going to be addressing. And so vaccine hesitancy is going to be critical for us as an organization, as leaders. So especially among our Black and Brown colleagues, we've got to make sure that we're doing what we can to help people and support their decision making. So three tools today in this spirit. First, did you catch Dr. Rennie Polite and an amazing set of panelists? I think it was two Fridays ago at this point. They had an amazing panel called The Vaccine Experience in the Black and Brown Community. If you have not seen this, I really want you to know it's must-see TV. You've got to take a look at it. I know for me personally, it really helped me to get a deeper understanding around what some of the historical perspectives have been that are shaping people's decision-making now. And as a leader, it helped give me some tips that I've put into use with my own team. So I would really recommend watching that. Secondly, we created a very brief job aid at the request of Phil and Dwayne Duckett and others in the vaccination effort to help you as leaders be having conversations with your colleagues, especially those with diverse backgrounds, about what we can be doing to help support their decision-making process. While vaccines aren't mandatory, it's always helpful to make sure that you're helping to support decision-making and provide the information that might be helpful for those colleagues. That job aid will help you kind of find the words to have those conversations. Finally, one last commercial. I want to promote the 2021 MLK Health Equity Symposium entitled The History and Future of Race, Health, and Justice. The speaker is going to be Dorothy Roberts, who's a professor of law and sociology at the university. So mark your calendars, February 3rd at 12 p.m. G, if you wouldn't mind posting the link for the registration in the chat, that would be great. And I hope to see you all there. So let's talk about today, because it's going to be really good. So many of you have asked, what are our next steps towards cultural transformation to making sure that Penn Medicine becomes even more anti-racist and equitable in the days ahead? And I'm excited because today we're going to hear from our experts who've been leading this work. So here are some of our goals of what we're going to hope to accomplish. We're going to get the update on the ACT roadmap and where we are for cultural transformation. We're also going to hear how we're doing as a health system about our unconscious bias training, which is a Penn Medicine team goal, and so we'll talk about that. We're also going to hear about our vaccine launch program and how we're doing and how vaccine hesitancy is going. Are we starting to move the needle through our efforts around vaccinating our entire Penn Medicine population? And then obviously we've got lots of questions for you out there in the audience, so I'm glad you're here. I want to hear some of the things that you and your teams are doing relative to changing the culture, relative to addressing these important issues. So I'll look forward to hearing from you in the chat. I'll try to incorporate as much as your comments as possible, and we will we'll look forward to a really robust discussion. So time for you. Pull out your phones. I got to hear how you're doing. Let's check in. So if you wouldn't mind using your cell phone, text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. You'll get the text saying that you're in the survey. And I would love to hear, what emotions are you feeling today? What emotions are you feeling? How are you doing today? I'd love to hear one word that really depicts how you're doing by your text message. So while we're waiting for your results, it is my great honor and privilege to introduce our guest for today's conversation. Dwayne Duckett is our SVP and Chief Human Resources Officer for the health system. Dr. Eve Higginbotham is our Vice Dean for Inclusion and Diversity and from the Perelman School of Medicine. She's also a physician and in ophthalmology. Dr. Judith McKenzie is the Division Chief and the Residency Program Director at our Division of Occupational Medicine, and Leah Rubini from Change Management here at PMA. We are really lucky to have you. I'd invite you to come onto camera, come onto your live mic, and let me just welcome you all here. All right, so Casey, how are we doing on the poll? Let's take a look at what emotions our audience are feeling today. All right, so we're seeing kind of a balance, hopeful, optimistic, tired, overwhelmed, exhausted. Yeah, I don't know, this full moon, it's really working on me too. Whew, I feel a little bit of these words as well. Inspired, content, busy, stressed, defeated, sorry, cold. I have to admit, I feel a little cold too because I have to turn my heat off so it doesn't interfere with the Wi-Fi. I love the smiley face. All right, so we're seeing a balance again, as usual, around how you're doing today. Thank you for sharing that with us. Casey, thanks for doing our poll. So Dwayne, Eve, I really wanna start with you. I wanna say thank you so much for your fantastic leadership. It's really exciting, the work that's underway. And before we jump into hearing more details about the work, I just wanna acknowledge that this is groundbreaking work. This is the first initiative that we're really working literally across every facet of Penn Medicine. And I wanted to say thank you for being such strong facilitators of this system-wide effort, which has included so many voices from both the School of Medicine as well as the health system. So thank you for your leadership. Thank you for being great facilitators and so inclusive in our process. So let me start with you, Eve. What's it been like to facilitate such a groundbreaking transformation effort at Penn Medicine?
Well, first of all, thank you, Cindy, for inviting me to be part of this panel. This has been a labor of love since May 25th, when the world's attention turned to the United States, and here at Penn Medicine, we have the chance to make a difference. I would say in one word, this has been an inspiring time for me, just to see how many people have been involved in this process. So I've been excited based on the enthusiasm that I have felt from a number of colleagues across campus, as well as the system, as well as the opportunity.
Thanks, Eve. Dwayne, I have to give you so much credit. It can't be easy to come into the organization and then be leading transformational change efforts that are groundbreaking within your first couple of days. Thank you for that. What's it been like for you?
Well, it's been a really busy time, and in a lot of ways, it's a continuation of work that, as a Black executive, that you're doing most of your career, whether you realize it or not. And being a part of it here at Penn has been very, very encouraging and exhilarating from the standpoint of the level of attention, commitment, and quite honestly, things like this, forums to talk about it, and resources put against an effort that's going to be a long journey. And it seems that the organization's going into it with its eyes open, and I'm really bullish on terms of our ability to really move the needle on things.
Thanks. I know so many tuning in today are also feeling that energy and momentum and just want to be at the ready to be doing more. Eve, would you walk us through and give us an update on the outcomes on the ACT strategic roadmap? We'd love to hear it.
That would be great, and I'd love to do that. And we, as an ophthalmologist, I have to do it with slides. So this will be very brief, but a picture's worth a thousand words. As you mentioned, Cindy, this has been a grassroots effort. We're facilitators of this process. We had over 5,000 voices, over 170 focus groups, and we've synthesized over 160 recommendations. But along the way, and this all started with Ernest, in partnership with your group, the Penn Medicine Academy, this all started in earnest last summer. We've been meeting weekly, almost daily in some of those weeks. And in the process, there's been a lot of work that's been done. And that work has been translated into what we call Just Do It's, borrowing from a famous company that actually puts forward action now. And so there have been as many as 64 action items that have already been underway. So with any new initiative, new journey, we start with core mission and core values. And I know I have been looking at more news in the last couple of years than I should admit, but I'm always reminded about how important the Constitution is for our country and how this 4,500 word document really guides our work in terms of the governance of this nation based on principles. Similarly, with ACT, we consider this a journey that we're taking together. Action for Cultural Transformation, also based on core values, which is intended to be the glue to do this work. And that glue includes the core values that you see in that inner circle there. Those core values are respect, cultural humility, empathy, equity, and accountability, all very important. And paraphrasing the words of Amanda Gorman, who spoke at the inauguration, we are striving to forge a vision with purpose. Our vision for the future. If we are successful in completing this task, this journey, then Penn Medicine is united as an anti-racist, equitable, diverse, and inclusive organization. And every day as we come to work, as we see patients, as we are working in labs, we are eliminating structural injustice across Penn Medicine, the communities we serve. So this is the framework. It's intended to be a framework for the journey that we're taking together so that we can accomplish this vision. And so when we are successful, what are the things we've already accomplished? If we could use a telescope into the future, what are the priorities that we will have actually initiated? You can see here that we have these six buckets, and that's taken from the town hall meeting that we had in June. This is what we heard. People wanted to have a lot of focus on people and culture, you know, critically important, that's cross-cutting. But we also had other areas that we wanted to focus on as a community, clinical, research, education, and community. So these are our core areas of interest and focus. And so the work is already done. As one example, one of the things we see in culture is that we want to specifically have a shared understanding of the vision and bias-free policies and practices. And that work has already begun. Over the next couple of slides, you'll see that we have specific actions. I'm not going to go through all of these, but I'm just going to tee up a couple of examples just to give you a sense that we're not just talking about principles, we're talking about specific actions. And these are actions that we're undertaking in the next 6 months. This is our implementation process that is now being initiative. So for instance, under culture, we're developing a comprehensive communications plan, emphasizing our shared commitment to change and the executive support. And we are providing input into the independent review of the Penn Department of Public Safety led by the law school. This was an important area of interest, and we have facilitated the input from the community into that process. And on the next slide, on the community side, we, as you know, as a university, committed over $100 million to the Philadelphia School District over the next 10 years. So that's a start as we invest in primary school education. So those are just some highlights. You can see with all the bullets, there's specific actions. But Cindy, we're on our way.
Thanks, Eve. I'd love to get any reactions from the audience. How does this sound? What do you think of the guiding principles, our mission statement, our mission, vision, values, strategic priorities? How does this sound to you? I'd love to hear from you in the chat. People are really loving Amanda Gorman, Eve. I thought she was inspiring also. She's going to be at the Super Bowl, so we're going to get more Amanda Gorman in our lives, which I like. So reactions, I'll wait for you on the chat. Sarah says she's really glad to see the gift to the school district, hopes we continue to increase that commitment. Other feedback, how does this sound? Some of you, it may be your first time seeing it. Some of you are leading local efforts. Does this align with some of the things that you're thinking about locally as well as kind of our overarching vision for the organization? Love the commitment to local education came in again. Great roadmap for getting us started, both at the system level and our local level, says Chris Tierney, CHRO of Pennsylvania Hospital. Thanks, Chris. Jenny says it's refreshing and exciting to see actions taken and continued goals for direct action. That's great. So I'm sure many of you are saying, okay, this sounds good, so what's next? Wayne, would you mind walking us through the next steps for ACT?
Sure. So in this time frame, that being January and February, hard to believe it's February already for all intents and purposes, we're establishing our work groups and crystallizing the working plan. We're also developing more communications materials, and this forum is a good example of another innovative communications medium in terms of getting word out about what ACT is all about and what our aims are. So February through April, we're going to concentrate on execution and mobilizing people. Managers are going to be giving materials that they can cascade down through the organizations. Work groups are going to become more active and look to carry out more of the work of facilitating and, most importantly, listening to what's happening on the ground with regard to these issues and making Penn Medicine a anti-racist culture. Then from February, which we're in the middle of now, through the end of the year, we're going to continue to measure our progress. And that's going to take a level of energy and commitment. It's also going to take a level of energy and commitment from the standpoint of, if progress isn't apparent up front, we have to keep at it. This is a long journey. It's going to have a lot of twists and turns to it. We're getting used to dealing with twists and turns over the past 4 years and going into this year with variations on viruses and government insurrection and all kinds of other things. So staying at it is going to be important, keeping our energy level up on these issues. We're going to have regular communications in terms of progress and the things that are actually being done. And there's a nomenclature around something that we call just do-its, which are actually underway now throughout the organization, things that are being retooled, re-examined, looked at, and executed against as far as this initiative is concerned. Then last but not least, many of you will have the opportunity to be involved in this process and this initiative. We're going to deploy the output of what you have to say in terms of your work groups. Again, the listening aspect of this is the most important, and with the sponsorship of Larry Jamison and Kevin Mahoney, in terms of being interested in making real progress against this, they are interested in what it is that you have to say at the ground level in terms of these initiatives going forward and what it is that we have to do to take the culture to where we want it to be eventually.
Thanks, Wayne. We're getting a lot of tremendous positive feedback to say that the goals look doable, that we're hitting on some of the right things. LG, somebody said, oh, this is great. It's aligned with the LG work that's happening locally. Dr. Wender, from the chair of family medicine, said this is the right start. Access to primary care is a crucial goal in expanding diversity and being more inclusive, key goal. Gary shared your same sentiments, Dwayne. It's a start and it's a long road ahead. And yes, both are true around that, but I'm glad to see so many of you feeling as if the plan is heading in the right direction. Dwayne, Eve, you both talked about Just Do It and so much momentum being built and continued underway. What do you think have been some of the wins that you've been excited about? Maybe, Dwayne, could I start with you? Where do you think some of the Just Do It have been really great and you're excited about them?
Well, from the standpoint of looking at processes that we have at our disposal right now and examining as to whether they have a disparate impact from a racial standpoint and other standpoints like gender, et cetera, we started that work. In terms of getting deeper into the issues, my office has established a division that works on employee relations, culture, and policy, and a lot of the sort of feedback we've been getting has been around some of these issues of race, et cetera, and equitable treatment. So there's lots of Just Do It's that are being executed against, and there's a lot more that we have immediately at our disposal. And it is amazing to see the amount of work and how fast the organization has mobilized to pick some of those things up and really start to push them forward even further.
Thanks. I feel that way as well. Eve, what about you? What have you been impressed with? What's Just Do It's really stand out to you?
Well, there's so many. As I mentioned, there are over 60, but there are a couple that I'd like to just highlight for the moment, just adding to the list that Dwayne just mentioned. I was really excited when there were two health equity goals noted as team goals for the system around colonoscopy as well as maternal health. These are issues that impact communities of color in particular and certainly can raise the boat for everyone in terms of better health. So that was a great Just Do It. So that's underway and certainly will be completed by June 30th. And then the second one I'll just mention, just trying to clarify, just how do you actually report a bias? And so at least on the university side, we're able to clarify the portal for how to do that. How do you actually report that there is a bias incident that you'd like to share? And we really do want to encourage people to share those reports, because only by bringing all these issues to the surface can we better understand how to actually find solutions. And so it's a work in progress. We are continually refining the process to ensure confidentiality, which I know is critically important, not only to us in the Office of Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity, but the entire community.
Thanks, Eve. Yeah, Dwayne, I'd love to hear. Are we thinking of that on the health system side too?
Well, I just wanted to add in one other Just Do It.
Please.
Which we just did, which might not be on the list. And the neat part about it is the sort of Penn Medicine community and the campus community did this together. And that's something called Project Quaker, where we stood up basically a new testing capability for students at the university. And the key part about that, that deals with diversity and, you know, sort of promoting a more equitable environment, is we hired literally hundreds of new people into the organization that traditionally would not have thought they could apply or thought that they would have a place in the organization directly from something called the West Philadelphia Skills Initiative, or WPSI, and working directly with the community to get people that fill entry-level jobs and help us out with this testing effort in the prevention of the spread of COVID. So really big deal, and it involved a couple of things. One, letting people know it was okay to open up criteria for the jobs that we filled and not getting stuck on someone having to have had a job before in order for us to believe that they could do a job going forward. So hiring on terms of latent skills and aptitude. The other thing that I want to do is make sure that we mention our managers that are in charge of the labs and the technical testing capability for Project Quaker. They had to open up their minds in terms of looking at criteria for candidates and seeing the true potential of all the people that we were able to bring on board. So the apparatus was there and the belief was there to make this happen. And we literally have re-energized our connection to our community by hiring in folks that traditionally might not have thought they would have been a fit at Penn. So we've opened that up.
Thanks so much. Big shout outs to Bob Challender, Dr. Feldman, Dr. Roth, the PATH and lab staff, Lisa Babicki and the recruitment staff. Great work there. Just to synthesize what I'm reading in the chat, I think confidentiality around reporting some of these issues, Dwayne, Eve, is going to be very important, and I know you understand those things. So thank you for reviewing some of the Just Do Its. I'd love to hear in the chat, what Just Do Its are you proud of that you're doing locally with your teams? What's really made a difference for you locally? Would love to hear your Just Do Its and some of the work that's underway so we can be sharing both with Eve and Dwayne as well as with one another around what works happen. Leah, in the meantime, while we're waiting for the chat to come in around local Just Do Its, education really matters. We've got to raise our own level of consciousness around these issues of social injustice and racism. That's going to be critical to change. So many of us have been just blind to things hiding right behind, right in front of our faces a lot of times. We're right under the surface. And so we have to educate ourselves so we never go back to sleep. One of our first commitments to this work was Dr. Jameson, Kevin, ensuring that every single Penn Medicine faculty, leader, and staff get trained in unconscious bias. And that was through Dr. Higginbotham's recommendations. And they're very committed to this. They've made it a Penn Medicine team goal. So every one of us on the call today, it's in our power to make sure that we're dedicating time and resources to getting people through unconscious bias training. So Leah, talk to me. How are we doing against the goal?
Sure, absolutely. I echo your sentiments, Cindy, about the importance of this. If we look at it, you may recall, as each of us as leaders, we've now been encouraged to send our employees through an e-learning on unconscious bias. And it's so important, as Cindy said, because education is that first step, creating awareness about our own potential unconscious bias. You'll see the numbers here on the screen. We have the goal, as was mentioned, by April 1st for everyone to complete this training. You'll see to date, almost 18,000 people have completed it, but we still have a way to go. We have about 35,000 individuals that need to complete it. We've recently launched this, so we appreciate that we're just at the beginning, but at the same time, this education piece, creating a common language for us to talk about things more openly is such an important first step. And in looking at the comments, I saw the pieces about, you know, taking meaningful steps, realistic steps. Completing this training is a first meaningful step. And so we encourage you, if you haven't yet talked with your team about completing the training or even what you learned about going through the training, we encourage you to do that. You can see there on this screen the different details representing the different entities and areas. If you're curious about how you're trending, we know that there's always a sense of healthy competition, but this isn't about competition. This is really about us all taking the first step and supporting our teams in taking the first step. Dwayne will talk in just a moment about some next steps that we can take, and I know Cindy will highlight for you as well some of the different tools that are out there. So as you're encouraging individuals to take the training, we're also giving you tools about how to debrief the training, how to further conversations, which we found are such an important step in this journey. So Cindy, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate your words there. You're right, it's not a competition. This is like one of those hashtag Penn Proud moments. Like, we've got to get everyone through this training because it's the right thing to do. So, in the chat, brag to me. If you have 100% of your team through unconscious bias training, tell me, what are you doing to get the support, to get team members through that? I mean, I think all of us want to be committed to this work. So leaders who are making good progress, what are the tips and tricks of getting your teams through this that you've worked with already? Leah, I also just want to acknowledge you and all of the team's efforts in helping to put together the ACT strategic roadmap with Dwayne and Eve. It's been really an amazing effort to watch. So I want to thank you for your leadership there. So again, in the chat, tell me, what are you doing to get your team at 100% for unconscious bias training? Let me turn it back over to you, Dwayne. What advice do you have for us to keep the momentum going? As you can probably see in the chat, there are so many people doing so many things. It's amazing that we're spreading it across all of Penn Medicine. Any practical tips for leaders as they're kind of continuing to drive actions?
Well, first thing I'd like to say is that I think increasingly in America, we're acknowledging that being able to manage diversity is a true skill and a requirement for leaders in the organization. So from my standpoint and what I do in human resources and talent management, if you want to move up in big organizations, this is going to be something that you're going to have to develop a competency and a skill at. Managing diversity, making sure that you promote diversity and issues of quality throughout your organization in order to move on to that next level. So on terms of things that you can do in your department, one of my favorite phrases over the past decade or so is being able to conduct something called a listening tour. And as my grandmother used to say, you have two ears and only one mouth. And that's a real skill for a leader to be able to use those two ears and figure out what's happening in their organization or operation and make progress against it. And your people will help lead you, and other people will give you advice in terms of what needs to be done to be successful. And this initiative is no different. So plan on listening actively. Do a listening tour in your organization. Get your leaders together, your supervisors, your managers, and talk candidly about the vision and mission and the values of ACT. Do it in a way that allows for dialogue and doesn't sort of shut it down as a dictate. Find out what things concern your managers. There's lots of things on leaders' plates these days, and this is going to be a prominent one going forward. So helping remove obstacles for them to be able to manage this process along with all the other things that they do more effectively is going to be important. You want to optimize your responses departmentally to these issues in terms of unconscious bias training. You want to keep in mind you want to complete that by March. There's also available through PMA cultural humility training. And there's resources available in terms of the health equity research support items that are through CHIA. So accessing things that already exist, making sure that you tie all the pieces together is a critical step. And then you want to plan accordingly. So, you know, all of this does not come from the top down in the organization. We'd be interested in knowing what future goals do you have in terms of contributing to this initiative going into 2021. And we want to know what your department is going to be focusing on. One of the things that I'm impressed with is not only is this not a downtown initiative, but the amount of activity out in the entities in terms of ACT has been really impressive. Leaders like Mike Duncan and their activity out at Chester County, looking at all the things that are being done in Lancaster County, the leadership that our own HR people like Raina Flory has offered in Princeton are all critical things in terms of the potential that this out in the entities to actually get things done, because everything that's going to be measured at progress is going to happen out there where people are doing the work and servicing our patients. So let us know what you're doing. Focus on weaving this into all of your departmental activities. We're here to help facilitate and encourage and support.
Thanks, Dwayne. The chat's lighting up. Crystal Mitchell said that you read her mind. And Gretchen said, well said. I wanted to just shout out Kristen. They are 100% trained in her department. It's part of their onboarding checklist to make sure it happens as soon as possible. They've created internal deadlines and make sure that they're following up with individuals. So Kristen, big shout out to you. Thank you. Maybe many of the leaders on the chat can take your advice. Bob Vanderheide asked if we're going to have more training, like the next step training. And I think that Eve, Duane, and I have talked about this, and it's underway. Let's make sure we get everyone through unconscious bias training, and then we'll talk about what's next. We know training is one part of it, and there's so many other actions that have to go along with training that that's going to be critical as well. One of the questions that I'd love to hear from you in the chat, Eve and Duane asked me to ask you, not only what actions are you taking, and I'm loving reading all of the actions that you're taking, but are there barriers that you're facing? What supports do you need to be even more effective in driving this change work and aligning with the ACT strategic roadmaps? I'd really love to hear some of the challenges that you're facing so Duane, Eve, Leah, and I can be planning to help support you in the days ahead. So thank you for that. Eve, can I put you on the spot? I really enjoyed working with you on the ACT initiative and just getting to know you. You've been extremely generous and gracious with me as we've navigated some challenging conversations. And I think we're still all kind of getting accustomed to some of this. I know I can be a little bit clumsy when I'm talking about this. What tips do you have for leaders in creating safe spaces to have these conversations? Are there things that you would suggest?
You know, that's a great question, because I think it's something that is a learned characteristic of this work, because it really starts with the stories. That's why I'm glad that we teed up the idea of actually doing a listening tour and listening to the narratives, because we have a lot of stories within our units, and you know, this goes a long way in terms of acknowledging, you know, what people's experiences have been. It makes me feel respected. I grew up in the Deep South in New Orleans. You know, certainly my experience is different from someone else who may have grown up in New Jersey. But I would like to tell my story. And as a leader, opening that door is a first step. I also just want to mention that I know that the Center for Health Equity Advancement has a guide for having these conversation. So that would be another resource that people can tap into. But start with the stories and listening.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. All right. I want to make sure we have time to talk a little bit about vaccines. So Dr. Judith McKenzie, I'm thrilled that you're here with us today. Thank you so much. How's it going with our vaccine distribution?
Thank you, Cindy, for having me. And it's going great, actually. That's a great question. And also, before I start on that, I just want to thank the entire team that helped us stand up the vaccine clinic. Our plan started from October. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work. And also, thank you to the staff at the vaccine clinic. There are so many people who actually are making this happen. And finally, to the employees who come in, who are always so gracious and kind.
So Judith, let me just pause for 1 second. We really obviously are using the strobe light effect on the slide here to get everyone's attention about what a big deal vaccination is. So I apologize for that. Casey, I'm hoping that we can rectify that or just take it down. And maybe Judith, you could just talk to some of the data that we wanted to show about how we're doing overall.
Okay, sure. So that first bar graph, which you did not see, showed that in the first 4 weeks of the vaccine clinic, which was from December 16th to January 18th, we actually gave 11,000 ad hoc doses, first doses, and almost 3,000 second doses. And for the entire health system, we gave around 33,000 first doses and 10,000 second doses. That was within 4 weeks. But what I want to point out is that within 6 weeks, which is as of yesterday, and it's not on the slide, this is in 1 month, within 6 weeks, we have given 20,000 at HUP alone and almost 60,000 at all the entities within the health system. So if you think about that, that's like over 3,000 doses per week at HUP and over 10,000 doses throughout the health system. And I think that's pretty amazing. So, you know,
I give a big shout out to you, the team out in LG, all of the people doing this who are also balancing COVID treatment, resurgence efforts, making sure they're taking good care of themselves and their team. So great work to all. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's a big shout out to everybody involved, those that you see and those that you don't see.
Absolutely.
A picture of two of the signs that are used throughout the health system. And there are two pharmacists here preparing the vaccines for the vaccinators, or vaccinators, or nurses and pharmacists. And this is one of our lead admins in occupational medicine who is in the registration area. So there are different stations all the way along, and some of you who've been out there have seen it. And we just want to thank you for your patience and grace and the positive energy that you've brought to us as we did the vaccinations.
I got to give a big shout out to my friends over at Pennsylvania Hospital, where I went to get my vaccine. They could not have been more efficient, more effective, gave great service, amazing experience. So I'm so happy. Judith, how about vaccine hesitancy? I know that this continues to be a worry, and especially with our Black and brown colleagues. How are we doing with addressing vaccine hesitancy among our colleagues?
That's an excellent question. And there's some data on the next slide. Before the vaccine rollout started, early mid-December, there was a survey sent to the HUP employees, because we wanted to see ahead of time what did this look like, right? So what we found is that with Asians and whites, there were over 70% likely to take the vaccine if offered. Within the Hispanic population, it was around 64% if offered. And within the Black population, the response was 36% if offered. But what's interesting is that 34% said they would not take the vaccine. So clearly there was some hint of some hesitancy among our Black and brown colleagues. And this was also borne out by the Kaiser Foundation surveys as well, which even in December showed that 35% of African Americans say they would not take the vaccine. There have been many, many initiatives throughout the Penn system, both across all entities and also individually within entities. But before I talk about those, our current data show that among Asians and whites, it has been borne out over 70%. This data shows all the entities, LGH also as well, but because it was not within the data of all the entities, but we didn't want to leave them out, obviously. And Hispanics, it's around 58%. But again, it's 37% among Black and brown employees. But the issue is, even though it says 37%, that seems very close to 36%. When we did start the rollout in December, it was much lower among African-American employees. So we've moved from low 30s to 37%. And actually for a couple of entities, they're at 41%. So maybe we need to look at what they're doing.
Absolutely. I'd love to ask the audience, what are you doing in your areas to help people make their vaccine decisions, especially among those colleagues with diverse backgrounds? And Judith, I'd love any tips that you have to share with leaders on how to have those types of conversations or other things that we can be doing to be helping people make good decisions for themselves.
I can tell you what's been done so far from the information I've gathered. We're really lucky at Penn Medicine to have amazing leadership, whether it's our CMOs or CEOs or SVP, who's right here with us, Dwayne, because everyone's all in. And not just that, other organizations within Penn want to contribute. So I feel that at Penn, whenever there's a problem, everyone tries to help, which is really nice. So globally across all the entities, we've had communications very involved. They've done posters. You've probably seen the posters of our employees saying why I took the vaccine. There's screensavers that have been sent all through all the entities. There have been town halls, right? 2 weeks ago, we had one with Neil Fishman and Renny Polite. There's also been at Pennsylvania Hospital with Onyeka, and I'm sure there are others. There's also been at, I heard about CCH having similar Zoom meetings with experts in the community. I don't want to leave anybody out because there's so much going on. The Innovation Center is involved, HR is giving hourly employees time off to get the vaccine. And there's been a letter sent out by leadership as well. And this is important because, as we all know, the CDC data show that Blacks are more likely to be infected with COVID-19, hospitalized, and actually pay the ultimate price. A research done here that I read about yesterday by Sun and Mantani showed that in Philadelphia itself, the Black cancer patients are twice as likely to test positive for COVID-19 with that underlying condition, there's more morbidity and mortality as well. And of course, there are historical reasons for this, which we've all heard about. So it didn't just arise in a vacuum. For example, we've heard about experimentation done on slaves without anesthesia, such as Marion Sims, for sterilization of African Americans, the infamous Tuskegee experiment, and even more recently, the blacks just not feeling comfortable within the medical establishment, the documented case of Susan Moore when she was ill with COVID-19. And I'm sure if you talk to even people around us, and they can give stories, as Eve was saying, and I think Duane as well, listen, and you will hear what people have to say about what they've gone through, and that will help you start a conversation. So some of the reasons people hear Red Pen give is, I'm the only breadwinner of my family. If I get sick, what will happen? What I would say to that is, so far, if anyone has had any symptoms from the vaccine, it's usually a day off from work, maybe two. No one's been sick for weeks or months. But COVID-19 can certainly put you down for weeks or months. I don't know enough about the vaccine. A lot of all the entities, I think, are doing one-on-ones with people, which I think is really crucial. And anecdotally, I've heard that that's probably the best way, these small huddles and one-on-ones, because then you actually meet people where they are in their stage of change, to have them move from pre-contemplation to action to actually get the vaccine. And we've actually seen the wheels turning in people as they we talk to them. So the one-on-ones are really important. The huddles, that we did them at HUP. I know that we've done them elsewhere at the other entities as well. So concern about side effects, one-on-one can help with that. The vaccine is too new. We know it's not new. It's been 10 years in the making with Dr. Weissman. So all these things we can actually, I guess, right now we're calling them myths, and we have Mythbusters. And communication is actually working, and on another brochure to sort of put out to the employees in this regard. So there's a lot going on.
Thanks so much. Got a shout out Kim Hills. She said, my team feels very grateful for being able to get the vaccine, and they have 100% participation. Thank you. Thank you for that. And Judith, thank you for all of your efforts. Would love to hear any other tips that leaders are employing locally to help their employees feel comfortable and confident in taking the vaccine. So I want to open it back up to Eve, Duane, and Judith. Following our last Lunch with Leaders with Kevin, we received feedback that our audience would love to hear kind of nuggets of wisdom on your career. Judith, I'm going to start with you, and maybe 1 minute or less, could you share a key experience that helped you become the leader that you are today?
Gosh, I cannot boil it down to one experience, but what I think has sustained me here is finding good mentors, both within and without the institution, with whom I can truly communicate, and also just being persistent, not giving up, and also just really taking care of my mental health as much as possible. You know, there are so many small things to do. Go outside, listen to music, whatever it is. Even if you can't get away for a long, beautiful, expensive vacation, especially during COVID, but you can do the little things that keep you going. So there's no one incident for me. It's just the day-to-day being persistent and really holding on to the grace that is Penn Medicine.
Thanks, Judith. I'm putting you on the spot. What is your jam? If you're tuning on to some music, what's your jam?
Gosh, this is embarrassing, but I actually love calm Christian music. I'm Episcopalian.
That's
right. I bring religion into it, but that's my thing.
Oh, I love it. All right, let me go over to you, Duane. What's a nugget of wisdom? How did you become the leader that you are today? 1 minute or less, lightning round.
Well, there's a couple of aspects. One, from a business standpoint, and really focusing on numbers and focusing on being empathetic. I'd say it's my experiences at Carnegie Mellon on the other side of the state and getting my master's degree from there and really learning how data is important to all the things that we do. Also from a business standpoint, being a third shift production supervisor as my first job out of school taught me empathy. And it really doesn't matter what's happening on the sort of first shift or when all the executives are in. When you're on that third shift, you see what's really going on in your facility. And I was making Kool-Aid, by the way. figure out how these messages that come from upper level management have to actually be applied and how to actually get work done. From a personal standpoint, what's made me the leader that I am today is watching my parents. My father had a ninth grade education, was a World War II veteran, but one thing that he was persistent. He kept grinding away and chipping away at all the obstacles that were put in front of him. He passed away when I was 12 years old, and I watched my mother go from being a person that was doing janitorial services to go back to school and get her degree from LaSalle and become a Philadelphia Public School substitute teacher. And just chipping away and not just sort of accepting where you are today and looking at things not as failures but as setbacks and acknowledging what you can do better are the things that I got from them. So I think on those two levels, from a business standpoint and a personal standpoint, that's what's made me the leader that I am today. Being able to respond with empathy, look at numbers, and be objective.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Dwayne. I really appreciate hearing your story. Eve, talk to me. What do you think? What made you the leader you are today?
We could have an hour-long conversation about this, if not longer, but I would say as a leader in every position I've had, I've been driven by providing access to opportunities for everyone that I could, and that would be through mentorship and sponsorship, trying to facilitate ways to advance the careers of others. And I think that goes back to, and I guess I'm showing my age, growing up in New Orleans at the end of the Jim Crow period, remembering those times when I had to go to those crowded, segregated pediatric waiting rooms and wondering why couldn't I go to the big one on the other side with the larger TV, and just having these structural barriers placed in front of me. And then when I finished my training finally in Boston, and I really wanted to stay in Boston because I fell in love and wanted to be there, I was told, well, I don't know who's going to refer to you. And it was, again, being judged based on my appearance and not on what I could do, even though I had published papers and done research. But the divine providence has a way of moving in a way that protects us. And so I got the best job that I could at the University of Illinois, at the Illinois Eye and Ear Infirmary, and had the best inclusive leader there. So it's access to opportunity. That's one of the components that we're looking at in enhancing the inclusiveness of our community. And my jam is Good Job by Alicia Keys. I love that song.
I dig her too. You're getting shout outs on your pearls, Dr. Higginbotham. Leah, can I put you on the spot 1 minute or less? How'd you become the leader you are today?
Oh my goodness. It is
also so pearls and the shout out to pearls.
Thank you. I'm humbled by the stories that I've just heard. And I think like everybody else, we could spend hours talking about this. But the one thing that stands out for me is when I worked for a life sciences company, I was their head of HR, and it not only supported sales, marketing, but it was also manufacturing. And as I traveled around, my key strength, if you were to look at my strengths finder, number one is individualization. And so I really appreciate individuals telling me more about them, how they got to where they are, what their life has been like, how that's created them to be the person they are today. And I have to say, as I did the traveling I did and really spent time with individuals, getting to know them, their culture, what was important to them, what was scary for them, it's really what got me into the place that I am now in terms of driving change, of understanding. And I know Dr. Higginbotham mentioned this earlier, everyone has a story. Everyone has a past that you may not appreciate. And really getting an understanding of that, meeting people where they are, it allows you to make this connection, to be empathetic, and then to figure out where do you go from here, which is why I got into change, because I really do value people being open with me and sharing some of their personal information, their little nuggets that maybe they haven't wanted to tell anybody else. But then making sure that I've respected that confidentiality because they've been so vulnerable. So for me, I have to say that was one of the most impactful experiences that I keep with me, is what I've learned about different cultures and the way people see things and experience things.
Thank you so much.
By the way, I have to say, I like silence. I don't have a favorite jam. I'm so sorry to disappoint.
No problem. Dwayne, since we asked everyone, do you have a favorite jam?
I would say some favorite people, and I'll date myself a little bit too. I There's a bassist named Jaco Pastorius. Anything by Jaco is right in there.
All right, cool. We're going to have to check Jaco out. Well, I can't thank the four of you enough for being our guests today, for all of your amazing leadership and facilitation of such a rich process, both the ACT strategic roadmap as well as the vaccine distribution process. My hats are off to all of you and everyone that attended today. Thank you for your great stories, your insights, your tips. I want to just assure you in the audience today that we have a lot of resources for you. We have job aids, we have talking with your employees about the vaccine, we have the anti-racism resources, Don't Diss Me, the importance of including disabled identities on your teams, talking with your teams about diversity and inclusion. We've got a lot of resources, so you're not alone in this work. I know that many of you, you know, said that you wanted to keep going and participate, and we've got your names, and I'll be distributing the chat to Eve and Leah and Dwayne. So we'll see what we can do about incorporating you. I want to encourage you to keep driving actions there locally as well. Tune in next week. We've got another great show. We're going to talk about the blueprint to one pen medicine. Our guests will be Dr. Brennan, Jim Ballinghoff, Teresa Larrabee, Dr. Karen Pinsky, and Pat Sullivan. You will not want to miss this show because there are a lot of tie-ins to what we're doing with ACT and health equity with the blueprint for quality. We have a great lineup for Lunch with Leaders for the next couple of months, so I hope you'll continue to tune in. I want to say thank you so much to each of you for joining us today. Thank you for being the leaders that you are. Thanks for continuing to show up when it's been challenging, and you keep bringing your energy, your passion into the work. Thank you for being a leader right now during this difficult time. Together, when we come together in community, we're all making a tremendous difference. So I look forward to seeing you on in the next show. Thank you for all you're doing.